Shine. She's a part of the assembly line. She's making history, working for victory. Rosie, the riveter, keeps a sharp lookout for sabotage. Sitting up there on the fuselage, that little frail can do more than a male can do. Rosie, the riveter. Rosie's got a boyfriend, Charlie. Charlie, he's a Marine. Rosie is protecting Charlie, working overtime on the riveting machine. When they gave her a production knee, she was as proud as a girl could be. There's something true about red, white, and blue about Rosie, the riveter.
KSSR DB San Francisco, Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. Yesteryear, a look back at your favorite dramas, westerns, comedies, and musical variety shows from the golden age of radio. Here's your host for Yesteryear, Craig Roberts.
Well, thank you, Dave, and welcome to this edition of Yesteryear. On today's program, we bring you Suspense, starring Lloyd Nolan, and The Vial of Death from May of 1953. But first, on the lighter side, it's the Jack Benny program from September of 1954. Jack Benny replaced the rapid-fire one-liners of vaudeville with sophisticated character-driven humor, and in fact was the first in radio to do so. The whole show was built around situations rather than just jokes. You could steal from Henny Youngman, you could steal from other comedians, but you couldn't steal from Jack because it didn't mean anything if it was done by anyone else. The Jack Benny program aired from May 1932 through May of 1955, featuring one of radio's best love casts, including Jack's wife, Sadie Marks, as Mary Livingstone, wisecracking bandleader Phil Harris, tenor Dennis Day, and Eddie Anderson as Rochester. On today's program, Dennis wants to quit the show, and Jack is distressed to learn his program is not going out over the air. From September of 1954, it's Trouble with the Sound Engineer, the Jack Benny program on Yesteryear.
Major Bowes knows, I miss the shadow nose, Fred Allen's alley folks, the laughter of Duffy's Tavern, Helen Trent. Then we went to Can You Top This? Suspense in the Whistler sent those shivers up our spines. Uncle Don, I wish that he was on. Jack Armstrong, Bert and Marge, Amos and Andy. I long to turn the dial again to hear the past smile again. Radio, I miss you. Sodio, Vodio, Dodio, Do. Radio, I miss you so.
The Jack Benny Program. Strike Program starring Jack Benny with Barry Livingston, Rochester, Dennis Day, Bob Crosby, and yours truly, Don Wilson. Ladies and gentlemen, while September is one of the most beautiful months of the year, there's a certain sadness about it. Yes, many sad things occur at this time of year. Children have to go back to school, vacations are over, and people have to go back to work. The flowers wilt, the leaves die, and Jack Benny comes back on the air. And here he is, Jack Benny.
Thank you. Hello again, this is Jack Benny talking. And, Don, I want to discuss that introduction with you. On our final show of the season last May, you introduced me with an insult. And now, the first show of the new season, you do the same thing.
Oh, I'm sorry, Jack.
You should be. And before dropping the subject, let me remind you of the lyrics of that beautiful tune written about this particular month.
The September song?
Yes. Remember, Don, it's a long, long time from May to December. And it seems even longer when you're not eating. So watch it, Slenderella boy. Now, this is a new season, so we'll let bygones...
Hi, Jack. Hi, Don.
Bob Crosby. Bob, it's good to see you. You look wonderful.
Well, so do you, Jack. And you too, Don.
Thanks. I feel good, too. Tell me, Bob, where did you spend your vacation?
Well, Don, I didn't have a real vacation. You see, my television show on CBS, well, it's on 5 days a week, and, well, I was kept very busy.
Yeah, it's awful.
Yeah, but it did have its compensations. I was paid every week.
So you were paid every week. What good is that? A man needs a little relaxation. I mean, money isn't everything. You ought to realize that.
Oh, Usher.
Yes, sir?
Can you tell me where Mr. Benny's broadcasting from? I must be in the wrong studio.
Bob, you're not in the wrong studio. It's just that I have a new writer, and he hasn't grasped my character yet. That's all.
Well, when he gets his first check, he will.
I guess so. They all do sooner or later.
Gee, I feel sorry for you, Bob, working all summer.
Oh, wasn't that done? Gee, I took every weekend off. Gee, last weekend, I had a wonderful time with my brother Bing.
What'd you do?
Well, we did a little mountain climbing. Then we went into the woods, and we hunted. Then we enjoyed some wonderful fishing in a couple of streams and lakes.
Where were you? Yellowstone Park?
No, in Bing's front yard.
Now, wait a minute, Bob. I know Bing has a big house and ground, but it's not that big. Aren't you exaggerating a little?
No, I'm not, Jack. In fact, it's an even money bet that Bing's place becomes a state before Hawaii.
Gary may have to go to Washington as a senator. It'd be better than going to Pittsburgh as a ball player. Well, I guess you're right, Bob. You can have a nice vacation just on weekends.
Huh? Oh, certainly. Certainly, Jack. It's amazing what you can do in just 2 days. Why, a couple of weeks ago, Frank Remley and I went way up to the High Sierras.
You took Remley with you?
Yeah. Very unfortunate thing happened, too. We were climbing around a narrow cliff. All of a sudden, Remley slipped and fell about 30 feet to a small ledge, and no one could reach him.
That's terrible. What happened then?
Well, finally, one of those St. Bernard dogs with the brandy around its neck got to him.
Well, thank goodness. Where's Remley now?
Well, the last I saw of him, he and the dog were walking off, arm in arm.
Well, Remley always was an animal lover. You should see the tender way he treats an old crow. It's touching. Well, I remember once...
Hello, Mr. Benny. Hello, everybody.
Why, Dana!
Gee, it's sure good to see all of you again.
Good seeing you, Dennis.
I sure miss you, kid.
Yeah, you know, even though I hate to see our vacations end, there's something nice about all of us getting together again.
Yeah, that's right, Mr. Benny. Here we are starting a new series.
Yes, sir.
Are you looking forward to a good season?
I sure am.
So am I.
That's good.
In fact, this will be the best season I ever had.
Why?
I'm quitting your show.
We just started. You're quitting the show?
Uh-huh.
Don, get me a chair. I know this is going to lead into something, and I want to be comfortable. There we are. Now, Dennis, why? Why are you quitting my show?
Well, I think a man who is married and has 9 children should be in business for himself.
Dennis, look at me.
Yes, sir?
Dennis, do you have 9 children?
No.
Are you married?
No.
Then why would you say you're leaving my show because you're married and have 9 children?
I did that for your sake.
My sake?
I didn't want people to know I'm quitting because of the lousy salary you pay me.
What?
I grasped your character 12 years ago.
Now, wait a minute, Dennis. Look, I'm not going to get mad. It's the first show. I'm not going to get mad. Now, wait. No, I'm holding my temper, see? I'm not getting mad, am I? Am I getting mad? I'm not getting mad, am I? I'm not getting mad, am I? Now, Dennis, look.
Put your eyes back in.
Now, I only want to ask you something. I'm not getting mad. Do I look mad? I'm not mad, am I? I'm not. Now, I just want to ask them. How can you say I pay you a bad... It's a darn good salary, isn't it?
Yeah, when you pay it to me. But all of June, July, and August, no money at all.
Well, of course I don't pay you during the summer. We're off the air those 3 months.
We are?
Oh, certainly.
Gee, and every Sunday I came down here and sang my heart out.
Well, Dennis, that's your own fault. When you came down here every Sunday and saw a completely empty studio, not a soul in it, what did you think?
I thought you were slipping.
Slipping?
And it's about time, too. Nobody can last forever.
Now cut that out! Look, Dennis, this is the start of a new season, so I'm not going to lose my temper.
But I thought...
No, I'm not going to get mad, Dennis. Just think.
Yes,
will
sir. You?
Yes. I'm not getting mad. Just think.
Darling, I won't care.
Shall I catch a shooting star? Shall I bring it where you are? If you want me to, I will. You can set me any task. I'll do anything you ask. If you'll only love me still. When at last our life on earth is through, I will share eternity with you. If you love me, really love me, then whatever happens,
was Dennis Day singing If You Love Me, and very good, too. I'm not mad. Dennis, I thought your voice sounded beautiful. The tone was superb, the range magnificent.
Not bad for a kid who's been singing his heart out all summer.
Dennis, you can stop making things up. You didn't come down here and sing all summer. I happen to know that this summer you did a 4-week personal appearance at the Sahara in Las Vegas.
Yeah, that's right. I had a lot of fun in Vegas, too. I even did a little gambling there.
Dennis, you shouldn't gamble. You don't know the... Why, Mary!
Hello, Jack.
Hi, Mary.
Hi, everybody.
Hello, Mary.
Hello, Mary.
Hello, Mary. What were you fellas talking about?
What a big hit I was in Las Vegas.
Oh, yeah. I read where you broke records there.
Yeah, I'll say. When I left, they even dedicated a slot machine to me. There's a slot machine at the Sahara with my name on it.
Well, that's nothing. There's a slot machine at the Flamingo with Jack's blood on it.
Blood on it, blood on it. A little cut on the wrist, you make a big thing out of it. You come in on the first show, Mary, that's a fine greeting you give me.
Oh, I'm sorry, Jack.
Oh, sure, I bet you're not sorry at all. You don't see me for months, and that's how you say hello.
But I am sorry. And to show you I'm sincere, come here and I'll give you a big kiss.
All right, Mary. Get ready. I'm going to kiss you.
I'm ready, Jack.
There, Mary. How was that?
You lost more blood in Vegas than I thought.
Mary, if you're going to keep on like this, I'll be sorry that you didn't stay in Plainfield when you visited your family.
Well, say, Mary, were you in the East during the big heat wave they had?
Mm-hmm, oh, and it was really hot.
You know, Mary, I read one day where it got so hot. Mary, what are you staring at?
Oh, what's the matter with Don Wilson?
What do you mean?
Well, since I came in, he's been standing in the corner, not saying a thing, just sulking.
Gee, you're right. Don! Oh, Don!
Leave me alone.
Don, what's the matter with you? What's come over you so suddenly?
Not suddenly. Something I've been thinking about for 20 years.
Well, if there's something wrong, for heaven's sake, tell me about it.
All right, I will. Every year when we come back on the air, I start the program off by introducing you, and you come on and get applause, and then Dennis comes on and gets applause. Then Bob Crosby makes an entrance and gets applause. Then Mary comes on and gets applause. Everyone gets applause except me. It's not fair.
Well, if all you want is some applause, Don, we can fix that. Folks, how about giving Don Wilson a big hand? There you are, Don. How was that?
Wonderful, Jack. Makes me feel great.
Good. And, folks, I want to thank you for giving Don that big hand, because never has so little made so much so happy so fast. So there. And now, Don, that your little heart has been lightened, would you mind getting the Sportsman Quartet up to the microphone for the commercial?
Oh, I will. I will.
Oh.
Oh, Sportsman.
Hold it, Don. Hold it. Hello?
Hello, Mr. Billy, this is Rochester.
Hello, Rochester, what is it?
Well, I thought I ought to call and tell you your trunk arrived home.
My trunk?
Yeah, the one you took with you when you went out on that personal appearance tour this summer.
Oh, yes, did you unpack it?
Almost. And say, there's a high silk hat in there that I never saw before.
Oh, yeah, be careful with that hat. I bought it from a magician who was on the same bill with me.
A magician's hat?
Yes, I'm going to use it on my television show next Sunday. He taught me a trick with the hat. I put in two rabbits and pull out five of them.
Well, he must have taught the trick to the rabbits, too. There's 40 of them now.
Well, I'll be darned. By the way, Rochester, how's the program coming over?
What program?
What program? My program, the one I'm doing right now.
Your program isn't coming over the air. I turned the radio on to the station a few minutes ago, and all they have is music.
Rochester, are you sure you tuned into the right station?
Yes, sir, and all they have is a man playing an organ.
Well, that burns me up.
I know something that'll burn you up even more.
What?
He's getting laughs.
Look, Rochester, I better hang up and check into this. Just be sure and have dinner ready when I get home. By the way, what are we going to have?
Rabbit, what else?
All right, goodbye.
Goodbye.
Jack, where are you going?
To see the head engineer. There's something wrong. Our program isn't on the air.
But, Jack, in honor of your first program of the season, the Sportsman Quartet's prepared a special number, and they're ready to do it.
All right, Don, let them sing it to the studio audience. I've got to go.
Okay.
Take it, fellas. Valderie, Valdera, I'm a happy wanderer. We love to go a-wandering along the mountain track. And as we go, we love to sing our knapsack on our back. Valderie, Valdera, 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 Valderie, Valdera, our knapsack on our back. All summer long we had such fun until our dough was spent. When we wired Jack to send us some, this song is what he sent. Valderie, this wire he sent collect.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear.
Gee, I wonder why Rochester isn't getting the program. Probably something wrong with my radio at home. I can't understand CBS not sending my first program out. My second one I could understand. They think a little thing like that is going to make me quit. They're crazy. See, I wonder where I go to see the chief engineer. This must be it. It says George Foster, chief engineer. I'll go in. That must be him in front of the big electrical panel. Excuse me, are you the chief engineer?
No, I'm his assistant.
Well, I'm Jack Benny, and my radio program isn't going out on the air.
Who says it ain't?
I says it ain't.
Well, maybe it isn't.
Well, why isn't it?
I don't know, but it aren't my fault.
I'm not saying it am. Look, what is the reason for my show? What is the reason for my show not being broadcast?
Well, let me look at this control panel here. Now I see what's wrong.
What is it?
Well, you see, Mr. Benny, when you talk into the microphone, it creates a series of electronic impulses which are converted to vibrating wavelengths at varying frequencies, which are instantaneously reconverted by a series of transistors. Then it comes through here to the master control panel, then they pass through the superheptadyne condenser, and the volume is then rheostatically controlled.
Oh, well, I still don't quite understand from your explanation why my program isn't coming out over the air.
It ain't plugged in.
Are you sure?
Oh, yeah, certainly. You see, that's the plug hanging loose over there.
Well, for heaven's sake, plug it in.
Oh, I can't.
Why not?
Well, look, mister, I can pick up the plug, I can inspect the plug, I can dust the plug, I can polish the plug, but the union says only the chief engineer can plug in the plug.
Well, where's the plug? The chief engineer. Where's the chief engineer?
He went out for coffee. He'll be right back.
But I can't wait. I'm going to plug it in myself. I'll just pull this other plug out.
No. Don't pull that one out. That's one of the most popular programs on the air. Everybody's listening to it.
What is it?
Harry Hollick and his A&P Gypsy.
Well, that program hasn't been on for years.
Gee, why don't somebody come down here and tell me those things?
Now, look. Look, I've stood for
all... Oh, here comes Mr. Foster now.
Oh, yes. Mr. Foster.
Yeah.
Mr. Foster, I'm Jack Benny.
Well. May I shake your hand? I've already drafted your character.
Mind that. Your assistant here tells me that my program is off the air because that wire isn't plugged in.
Yeah, I know.
And he told me you're the only one that could do it.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, plug it in. Plug it in.
I wouldn't touch the nasty thing.
You better be careful. You'll be in lots of trouble when my sponsor learns about this.
He knows. It was his idea.
Now, cut that out. If you won't plug it in, I'll do it myself.
And that concludes tonight's Jack Benny program.
What?
We wish to thank his special guests, Harry Horlick and his A&P Gypsy.
Well, this is ridiculous. I'm going home and listen to Sam and Henry.
Jack will be back in just a minute, but first...
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear.
Who's that?
It's only me, Rochester. Any mail or phone calls?
Yeah, Mr. Frank Remley called. He wanted to tell you that he's opening at the Cine Grill at the Hollywood Roosevelt Hotel October 5th.
Oh, good. I'll go down and see him.
Mr. Remley said you'd enjoy it. He's got a special attraction this year.
A special attraction?
His vocalist is a Saint Bernard.
Well, what do you know? I'll sure go down and see that. Good night, folks.
Thank you.
From September of 1954, it's been Trouble with the Sound Engineer, the Jack Benny program. Coming up in a moment, it's Suspense and the Vial of Death, starring Lloyd Nolan, as Yesteryear continues.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear. Here's Craig Roberts.
Well, thank you, Dave, and welcome back to Yesteryear. Next up, it's Suspense and the Vial of Death, starring Lloyd Nolan. Suspense debuted on radio in July of 1940 as an Alfred Hitchcock-directed episode of CBS's audition series Forecast. The series later established itself as radio's longest-running and highest-quality mystery anthology, airing from June 1942 through September 1962. On today's program, a car is stolen containing a vial of deadly cholera bacteria, and police must find it before an epidemic begins. From May of 1953, it's The Vial of Death, starring Lloyd Nolan on Suspense.
Autolite and its 98,000 dealers bring you Mr. Lloyd Nolan in tonight's presentation of Suspense. Tonight, Autolite presents a story based on fact, the documented report of a man who lost a jar which contained the destruction of a city, Vial of Death. Our star, Mr. Lloyd Nolan. And now, Autolite presents Vial of Death, starring Mr. Lloyd Nolan, hoping once again to keep you in suspense.
When it happened, you knew nothing about it. The events of that long, frightening night began about the time you were catching a bus or a streetcar toward home. Probably you had dinner that night, played with the children, then went to bed. You slept. In the morning you got up, came to work, and it was just another day. By then it was all over. Many innocent people missed an appointment with death that morning. You might have been one of them. It was 5 o'clock on that particular night as I climbed the stairs of the downtown Central Station. I'm Lieutenant Joe Holloway, acting chief of detectives during the night watch. Most of the men on the day watch had deserted their desks and were climbing into overcoats as I passed them in the hall.
Evening, Lieutenant.
Sam? Hey, weren't you off yesterday?
Yeah.
Have a nice day?
I guess so.
I stayed up when I should have been in bed and took the kids out to the zoo.
And when I should have been up, I went to bed. Today, instead of going to bed, I was up.
But to answer your question, Lieutenant, I enjoyed my day off, but I should have stayed in bed.
Well, I guess I should spend more time with my kids, but I don't. Working nights 6 days a week, I never have time to see them.
I can understand that, Lieutenant, but today...
Yeah, I know. Maybe next week. There, anything interesting on the hotshot sheet?
Nah, nothing exciting.
Hey, did Ruby come in yet?
I'm a stakeout tonight.
Oh.
Well, might as well make out the watch for tomorrow. Evening papers come in yet?
No.
Excuse me, is this the office of the chief of detectives?
That's right.
Lieutenant Holloway?
Lieutenant?
Yeah?
This is Lieutenant Holloway, mister.
Are you in charge here?
That's right.
I'm Professor Harold M. Frohlich. The officer at the front desk told me to see you.
What can I do for you, Professor Frohlich?
Well, I'm afraid I'm going to need your help, Lieutenant. You see, my car was stolen a few minutes ago.
Oh, you want the auto theft division. It's right down the hall to your right.
No. You see, I was on my way to the university at Brenton for some lab analysis, and I stopped at a drugstore just a few blocks from here to buy some pipe tobacco.
Yeah?
Well, when I came out of the drugstore, my car was gone, stolen. And I'd left my satchel in the car, too. It contained various instruments and a sizable amount of narcotics.
Oh, I see.
No, you don't. I'm not so concerned about the loss of my car nor the narcotics.
Well, then, what are you concerned about, Professor Frohlich?
The vial. That's what worries me.
What vial?
There was a glass vial of bacteria in my satchel, too. You see, my work is developing antibacteriological techniques, protective methods against germ warfare. In this work, I use living microorganisms, bacteria, and the vial contained an extremely large amount of these bacteria.
Oh, I see. Now, what kind of bacteria did the vial contain?
Cholera bacteria.
Cholera?
Cholera?
Yes. Enough to start a cholera epidemic throughout this city in a matter of hours if the thief finds that vial and opens it.
How contagious is it?
Oh, if the slightest amount gets on the thief's hands or clothing, sooner or later he's certain to get it into his food or drinking water, in which case he would undoubtedly develop cholera and then could pass it on to others. Or thinking the vial is worthless, he might throw it away on the street and break it. Or he could easily throw it into one of the reservoirs around the city, not knowing what it is. Do you understand, Lieutenant?
Yeah, I understand.
Animals and rodents present the greatest danger of all. If they become carriers, an epidemic is inevitable and almost impossible to curb.
Wouldn't the bacteria die if they were exposed to air?
No, they wouldn't become exposed even if the vial were broken. You see, the vial contains a peptone broth, a milky substance. The bacteria are in this peptone broth like bees in a honeycomb. It not only protects them, but it nourishes them as well.
I see.
Lieutenant Holloway, you must find my automobile before the thief has a chance to get at that vial. You can't imagine the horrors this city...
Where was your car stolen?
At the corner of 10th and Main Streets about 15 minutes ago. It's a blue sedan, four-door.
Get this, Sam.
Right.
What year?
51.
License number?
6N16837.
What about the satchel?
Black, usual doctor's bag with my initials on it in gold. HMF.
Describe the vial.
Oh, let me see. About 8 inches long, diameter 2 inches. A silver pressure cap with a lump on top. It can't be opened without pressing the top. The contents are milky fluid. It's about the size of a baby's feeding bottle.
Sam, get Lieutenant Ruby off that stakeout right away. Tell him to meet me at 10th and Main.
Okay.
I'll put an APB on the car. Radio room, this is Lieutenant Holloway. Broadcast this immediately. To all units, stolen car registered to a Professor Harold M. Froelich. License number in the 8 column, 6NORA16837. A 1951 blue four-door sedan. If this car is located, hold and notify Lieutenant Holloway's Central Division immediately. You got that? Yeah. Now, also put out a call for all B units in the 4th, 5th, and 6th districts to report to me at 10th and Main, code 3. Sam?
Yeah.
Notify the chief. Then call the city health officer and tell him to meet me at 10th and Main right away.
Right.
This is Holloway. Send every available man to 10th and Main. Code 3. I'll be there in 5 minutes. We'll start a search of the neighborhood where your car was stolen. Maybe we'll find the car nearby. Maybe not, but it's a start.
Lieutenant.
Yes, what?
We must anticipate a cholera epidemic should the bacteria get loose. Serums, facilities, doctors...
We'll take that up with the city health officer.
And we must notify all hospitals and emergency wards to report immediately any case that appears with the symptoms of cholera. Then, if a case is reported, we will have something to work on.
Yeah, we will indeed have something to work on. It was 7 o'clock that evening when 120 officers and reserves gathered at the intersection of 10th and Main, where Professor Froelich's car had been stolen. The curious was shuffled off, the press banned. Lieutenant Ruby reported for duty, and I briefed him. At 7:30, the city health officer arrived. Serums were ordered, the Red Cross alerted, doctors and nurses notified to be on call if an epidemic started. Hospitals have been told to notify us if a case appeared with symptoms of extreme intestinal pain, spasms, vomiting, and severe dehydration. Everything was done without attaching the word cholera to the operation. At 8:15, a break, just a small one. Professor Froelich's car was found 10 blocks away.
This is it. This is my car.
He didn't drive it far.
Oh, I hope the satchel is still in it.
Well, we'll soon know.
There's nothing in the front seat. Keys still in it. Oh, Ruby, check the trunk.
Right.
Don't touch anything, Doctor.
No, no. Maybe it's in the back seat. Oh, nothing. Find anything, Ruby?
Nothing in the trunk, Joe.
Well, I guess he took the satchel with him.
I don't know why.
Pawn it, probably. Ruby.
Yeah?
Get a latent fingerprint man down here to dust this car.
Right.
Tell him to hurry.
Okay.
Now what, Lieutenant?
Now, we try to find that satchel. An hour passed. Two. No progress. The only fingerprints found on Professor Froelich's car were his own. Suspects were picked up. No make. The search for the satchel continued. Midnight. Still no progress. I thought about the other parts of the city, quiet, asleep, unaware of the night and what it had produced. At 1:30, another break. One we'd hoped wouldn't come.
When was he brought in, nurse?
A little after 12.
His condition?
Critical. Respiration very low. Severe dehydration.
You're certain about the symptoms?
Quite certain. Also, the lab confirmed presence of live vibrio organisms.
Who brought him in?
It was an ambulance call. The patient had been in one of those awful bars down the street. He suddenly became ill, delirious, then fell to the floor with intense spasms of the intestinal tract.
Better get the health officer on that bar right away.
Oh, yes, it must be quarantined at once.
In here. I thought it best not to put him in a ward.
Well, Professor Froelich?
Can you visualize this happening all over the city? Your wife, possibly your children.
Any chance of a mistake?
Presence of live vibrious organisms? There's no doubt now.
Nurse, was there any identification?
Just the wallet there on the stand.
Anything there, Joe?
His name was Al Walker, 8200 Carl Street.
I don't know.
Al Walker. Can you hear me? Al, listen to me. I've got to ask you some questions. Try to answer me. Al, did you steal a car tonight?
It's pretty weak, Joe.
Al, can you hear me? Al? Look, Professor, can I do any harm now?
I must, Lieutenant Holloway, but hurry. He's almost...
All right, Al. Al, listen to me. Answer me. Did you take a glass vial out of that car tonight? It was in a satchel, a glass jar in a black satchel. Al!
Glass jar?
Yes. Did you take it, the jar?
I can't breathe.
Al, did you take that satchel out of a car tonight?
Oh, really, Lieutenant?
Keep quiet, nurse.
Can you hear me? What did you do with that glass jar that was in the bag? Did you open it?
Milky's stuff inside.
Oh, no. He opened it.
What's wrong with me? I can't breathe.
Al, where is that glass jar now? Where?
I said, threw it away.
Where? Find out where.
Where did you throw it out? Where? Well, they're loose. Enough cholera bacteria to start this all over the city in the morning.
Autolite is bringing you Mr. Lloyd Nolan in Vial of Death. Tonight's presentation in radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear.
And now, Autolite brings back to our Hollywood soundstage Mr. Lloyd Nolan in Elliot Lewis's production of Vial of Death, a dramatic report well calculated to keep you in suspense.
Mr.
Walker was dead. Not knowing what the stolen vial contained, he had opened it and exposed himself to disease. Then he'd thrown it away. This is what faced us in our city that night. An epidemic of cholera. Professor Froelich, Ruby, and myself left the hospital. We crossed a sleeping city to the address found in Al Walker's wallet, 8200 Carl Street. It was an apartment house. We woke the landlady, and she led us into Al Walker's room. We searched.
I always said that Al Walker was a good-for-nothing. He never worked, loafed, drank.
You're certain he was here about 7 o'clock?
Positive. I heard him come in and go out.
Well, no vial, no satchel. Nothing but dirty laundry.
Well, what did he do? Steal them things?
Where do we go from here, Lieutenant?
I guess we'll have to go back and start with that bar.
You know, you better quarantine this place and get the health department out here.
What's that?
Anyone who came in contact with Al Walker will have to be vaccinated.
Well, what was the matter with him?
He was, sick.
Yeah, very bad?
Bad enough to kill him.
Al's dead?
That's right.
And you say anyone who was near him might catch what he had?
If they aren't vaccinated right away, they might.
Well, then, Mrs.
There's something you haven't told us.
Well, I don't want to cause anybody no trouble, but when Al was here earlier tonight, he stopped in to see Mrs. Pierce. They were friends.
Where does Mrs. Pierce live?
In 306, the end of the hall. I wasn't snooping. It's just that I like to know what's going on in my place, that's all.
Okay. Now, you better get back to bed, lady.
Bed? Who can sleep with a thing like this in the house? Well, what will the tenants say?
What time is it, Lieutenant?
3 a.m. Here it is.
Daylight in a few hours. There's much time.
I know.
Asleep?
Wouldn't you be?
Who is it?
Police. Open up.
Police?
Open up.
Hold it. I ain't decent. What do you want?
You, Mrs. Pierce?
Yeah, why?
Do you know Al Walker?
Al Walker? Yeah. You hold it down. My husband's asleep.
When was the last time you saw Al Walker?
Last time? I couldn't say. A week ago, maybe.
Evie, what's going on out there?
Nothing, Klaus. Go back to bed.
Who are these guys?
The police.
Hey, what's the matter?
Now, look, it's very important. We've got to know if either one of you saw Al Walker last night.
Al Walker?
I told you no. We ain't seen him.
Evie, you ain't been seeing that punk again, have you?
I ain't seen him. I told you I wouldn't.
Mrs. Pierce, last night Al Walker stole a car. When he left it, he took some things with him. Among them, a black satchel containing a small glass vial, a jar. This vial was filled with a milky substance. That milky substance would... Well, because of it, he's dead now.
Dead?
He died a few hours ago.
Al? Dead?
Anyone who came in contact with Al last night after he opened that vial can expect the same thing.
Oh, no!
You saw him.
What? Yes.
I thought you promised me you wouldn't see that punk no more.
Shut up, you big ape.
Mrs. Pierce, did Al have that vial when you saw him?
Yes.
What did he do with it?
Well, he opened it here in this apartment. He opened it and smelled it.
Oh, good smell.
He put the top back on because he said it smelled like rotten eggs. What was it? Will I get it, too? Will I get it?
Hey, Ruby, call downtown. Tell him to get out here fast for vaccination.
Right, Joe.
Now, Mrs. Pierce, what did he do with the vial?
Oh, he took all that stuff with him to a pawn shop at Third and Lock, and the old man there is a fence. Al takes all the stuff to him.
Look, you stay here. The health department will be here pretty soon to vaccinate you. Don't try to leave the building.
Am I going
to
be okay? I won't get it, will I?
I don't think so.
So you've been seeing that punk after all, after what I told you.
Will you shut up?
I hope you get it. Whatever it is, I hope you get it good. Serves you right.
Come on, we'll try the pawn shop. 3:30 a.m. We pulled up in front of the pawn shop at 3rd and Larkin. The shades are down in the windows, but there's a light somewhere in the back.
Someone's coming.
Yeah, he's up late, eh?
Oh, it has to be here. We've got to find it before morning.
We'll soon know.
what?
Open up, police.
Police?
Open up.
What for?
I said open it or we'll break it down.
Well, sure, sure. Whatever you say.
All right, now listen. I want some answers, Pop, and I want them fast.
Oh, sure, fellas. I always cooperate with you boys.
Al Walker was here last night. He sold you some stuff.
Al Walker? Who's he?
Lieutenant, look at this. My satchel. It was on the counter.
Well, is that yours, mister? You never know where this stuff comes from.
Will you quit stalling? We know Al Walker brought that in here. And there was a glass vial in that satchel. Where's it now?
I tell you, I don't...
Pop! Al Walker's dead.
Al? Dead? From what?
From the contents of that vial.
That milky stuff?
Then you have seen it.
Well, I did have.
Where is it now?
We threw it away. Wasn't worth anything, was it?
Where'd you throw it?
In the alley out back.
All right, show us.
Was it open?
No, closed. I didn't know the stuff was solid.
All right, honest, save it, Pop, will you?
Yeah, I'll keep it. There. I threw it in that pile of junk.
I don't see it.
I don't either.
Are you sure you threw it here?
Oh, right up top. I'm trying to cooperate with you boys, honest.
Oh, it isn't here, Lieutenant.
Keep looking. It has to be.
But he threw it there. Threw all the junk out there and... Damn kids.
What kids?
Well, some kids were playing here late last night. Always play here, and they're always picking things up and taking them away.
You say kids?
Do you know any of them?
Oh, I don't know for sure.
Joe, look at this chalk drawing on the wall.
What about it?
Well, them kids drew that there, always doing it.
Under this face, it says Louis is a gooey.
Louis? Sure, I know Louis. He was one of them. He lives over there. In one of them apartment buildings.
Which one?
I don't know which one. I seen him go that way sometimes.
It's nearly 4 o'clock, Lieutenant. Can we get through all those buildings before morning?
Well, we have to try. We'd better get Pop here vaccinated before we run him in.
Say, Joe.
What?
Don't you think it would be a good idea if we got vaccinated, just in case?
Well, sure, yeah. But we haven't got time, Ruby. Come on. It was a big block covered with big apartment houses. An additional 60 men were called in, and we started checking from apartment to apartment asking for a kid named Louie and the glass vial. The people half asleep must have thought we were crazy. What they thought wasn't important. What they would wake up to in the morning was. 5 o'clock, 6. It got light out. Then 6:30 and 7. It was a bright, beautiful, sunny morning. A few people began to appear along the streets. Buses and streetcars were running. The city was waking up. And still, we hadn't found Louis or the glass vial of cholera bacteria. We still had dozens of apartments to go through.
If we don't find it pretty soon, Lieutenant, we've got to let the city know about it. Warn them to watch for the vial.
No, not yet. Another hour, maybe.
Here's the next one.
Okay.
Bacon.
Yeah. Smells good.
Yeah.
Police?
What's wrong?
Do you have a child here named Louis?
No Louis here. Why?
Well, do you know of a boy by that name in the building?
No. All my boys are good children. They done nothing wrong.
Mama, Sybil's got my jar and she won't give it to
Tommy,
me.
Tommy, don't bother me now.
Who makes Sybil give me my jar?
Lieutenant.
Yeah. Hey, Tommy. Where's Sybil?
Hey, you can't come in like that.
Take us to Sybil, Tommy.
She's in the bedroom. I'll show you.
You stay here, lady.
You got a lot of nerve telling me what to do in my own place.
Where'd you get the jar, Tommy?
I took it away from Louie. It's a pretty jar. I'm going to keep spiders in it. Here's the bedroom. There's Sybil in the crib.
Joe, look.
Mama says Sybil's cutting teeth.
Easy does it. If she takes it out of her mouth and lets go of it, it'll fall on the floor.
Oh, careful, Lieutenant. Don't frighten her.
I got it.
Don't drop it, Joe.
Don't worry.
Oh, at last, thank goodness.
Here you are, Doctor. One glass vial containing 2 or 3 million cholera germs intact.
What are you doing to my baby? I never heard of such a thing. Coming into a private home and beating my baby and making her cry. You get out of here. You hear me? Get out.
All right. Yes, ma'am. We're sorry.
if the people in this city only knew what you boys...
But they won't know, Professor.
No, I guess not, Lieutenant.
Well, Joe...
Beautiful morning, Ruby.
Yeah.
It's gonna be a nice day.
Yep.
You know, Ruby, instead of going to bed this morning, I think I'll have breakfast with my family, and then I'm gonna take my kids to the zoo.
Suspense. Presented by Autolite. Tonight's star, Mr. Lloyd Nolan.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear.
Suspense. Suspense is produced and directed by Elliot Lewis, with music composed by Lucian Morowick and conducted by Lud Gluskin. Vial of Death was written for Suspense by Augustus C. Bays. Featured in the cast were Joseph Kearns, Jerry Hausner, James McCallion, Truda Marson, Martha Wentworth, Charlotte Lawrence, Joseph Granby, Naomi Stevens, Clayton Post, and Jeffrey Silver.
Lloyd Nolan can soon be seen in Island in the Sky, a Wayne Fellows production from the book by Ernest K. Gann.
And remember, next week, Mr. Dick Hames in Pigeon in the Cage.
From May of 1953, it's been Suspense, starring Lloyd Nolan in Vial of Death. Well, I'm afraid that's all the time we have for this edition of Yesteryear, but that's all right. We invite you to join us again next week at this time for the best from the golden age of radio. Till next time, I'm Craig Roberts. So long.
Radio, remember radio. We'd sit and close our eyes and use our imagination.